to date with world news every half hour on Press TV.
The top stories: the British government lifts pandemic restrictions on daily life in England, drawing strong criticism from scientists and opposition parties. Chancellor Angela Merkel says Germany will do more to fight the climate change, or climate crisis, I should say, as she visited the flood-ravaged areas in the country. And wildfires rage across parts of the U.S. and Canada, prompting authorities in some areas to issue mass evacuation orders. The British government has lifted all COVID-19 restrictions in England despite the high number of daily infections. From Sunday midnight, restaurants and cafes were able to reopen and other indoor venues were allowed to run at full capacity, while legal mandates for wearing masks and working from home were scrapped. Prime Minister Boris Johnson defended the lifting of bans but urged the public to remain prudent. Johnson is self-isolating after his contact with the British health minister who tested positive for COVID-19. Scientists and opposition parties have condemned the reopening as a dangerous leap into the unknown. The UK reported some 52,000 new coronavirus cases on Friday. That is the highest tally in over 6 months. The German chancellor says she has been shocked by the, quote, surreal flood devastation after visiting the deluge-hit areas. Take a listen.
It's terrifying. I would say there is no word in the German language to describe this devastation. However, what I have witnessed and what is incredibly comforting is how people are sticking together, how they are helping each other, the solidarity among people.
Angela Merkel further said the federal government and the state will work together to bring things to how they were. She added that they have to be faster in the fight against climate change. Merkel also promised swift financial aid to the flood-hit regions. Days of extreme rainfall in Germany and Belgium have so far claimed the lives of 188 people. Rescue workers are still searching for survivors in parts of northwestern Europe. The death toll could rise as many people are still missing. Now we're going to take you to the city of Seattle in the U.S. to be joined by Madame Jody Graich. She is the chair with Washington State Green Party, who comes to you via Skype. Madame Graich, it's good to have you with us. Tell me what you think about the story that I just read.
Well, for a long time, the Earth had great carrying capacity, and people were very careless with the Earth. But that isn't how it is anymore. And we are very slow to wake up because we've sort of felt like we had control of the Earth. It's obvious we don't have control of the Earth. Sure. And in fact, it would be much better off, probably, as a planet if we weren't here. But it's people have gotten used to being entitled to certain things, a certain standard of living. Population has grown like crazy. People are making and buying things in much greater quantities. The whole world aims to have the standard of living that the United States, unfortunately, has acquired. Wealth and power are concentrated, and people somehow who have wealth and power don't feel anything can hurt them.
So instead of natural disasters, is it safe to say that these are man-made disasters?
I think anyone who doesn't think they're man-made is hiding their head in the sand. Of course they're man-made. We're having, 100-year events every 25 years or less. Good planets are hard to find, and we have been not taking good care of this one for some time. and push is coming to shove. I do feel that people with power and money feel they're insulated from all that, which is a pretty selfish notion for starters, and probably not very accurate either.
Madame Grant, tell me, German Chancellor said that she was shocked by what she saw. Would you say that we are still in for bigger surprises by the nature, the way, as you put it, human is behaving to planet Earth? Would you say that we are still in for larger or bigger surprises or bigger shocks of the kind?
I think we are. I mean, we have glaciers melting. We have sea level rising. We have climate shifting, wind pattern shifting, the jet stream shifting. Things are in, dismal shape. And we know about it because we have press and TV all over the world now, so we know it's happening around the world, and yet people who aren't very directly affected still tend to think it's happening somewhere else and somehow someone else is going to solve the problem.
And how much worse do you think this is going to get before, if at all, it's going to be any better?
Well, I don't think it looks good. Because I think the tendency of people with power and money is to ignore it, to do studies, to tell, and people who are in the who have less money and less power are often really busy just trying to get food on the table and keep a roof over their heads. So
are you saying that a normal person like myself doesn't have a share in? Is there anything that that normal man can do in order to help the situation?
Well, I think there are several things. First of all, there has to be massive movements to hold people accountable, governments accountable, elected officials, corporations. I mean, the petroleum industry has known for decades that they were really screwing things up. But they want to make money. And they figure they won't be able to make money forever because there are only so many dead dinosaurs down there making oil, but they'll do it as long as possible. And people can't do that. This is a crisis situation. We've got to be willing to have work stoppages and walkouts and horrendous demonstrations. And really insist that people take accountability. I think that what they're doing in globally now to tax corporations and cut down on tax havens is a good place to start, because a lot of the funds that aren't being raised from corporations that are using tax havens and other dodges not to pay their share, I think could and should go toward the climate crisis, and to helping people who are in need, of which there's going to be a lot more pretty quickly.
Many, many thanks. That's Madame Judy Gray, chair with Washington State Green Party out of the city of Seattle. I really appreciate your time, Madame. Now let's continue with the rest of the stories that we have for you. That happens to be those fires that I just mentioned, wildfires that rage across parts of the U.S. and Canada, prompting authorities in some areas to issue mass evacuation orders. In the U.S. state of Oregon, the so-called bootleg fire spread to 290,000 acres of land, with authorities asking some 2,000 people to evacuate. People have also been asked to leave their homes across the border between Oregon and Nevada. There are at least 80 major fires active in Oregon. Heavy winds and widespread lightning storms are two of the major factors that fuel the fires. Lightning strikes are also blamed for a fast-growing inferno in California. Meanwhile, dozens of blazes continue to burn in Canadian provinces of British Columbia and Ontario. In the latter, a firefighter has died of unspecified medical emergency. Our Washington correspondent Colin Campbell says the recent fires are an indication, that is, of how climate change can impact the Earth.
Yeah, these fires are uncontrollable, and what experts are looking at now is the cause of climate change. Just like you were talking about in Germany with Chancellor Angela Merkel looking at flooding and now being more concerned about climate change more than ever. scientists and researchers in the U.S. are also ringing alarm bells over how climate change is really affecting the topography and the geography of the United States when it comes to inclement weather and disastrous types of conditions, particularly when it comes to wildfires, which are more common on the western part of the United States. Now they are seeing higher temperatures than ever before. In some states and cities, they're breaking records. In Death Valley, they recorded triple digits near 130 degrees. It's the hottest place in the United States, and they're seeing more temperatures that are rising steadily by the day that have beat previous records. Again, these high temperatures, dry conditions, make a perfect environment for forest fires to spread and wildfires to spread. And then when you have the intensity of the heat, the lack of water, where many places are facing drought, it's hard to put these fires out.
Cuba has been the scene of unrest and rival rallies over the past few weeks. The island nation is suffering from food and medicine shortages amid the coronavirus pandemic, with officials pointing the finger of blame at the United States.
Rally in Havana, with tens of thousands of Cubans taking part. They came together to voice support for the island's government and protest what they see as the U.S. meddling in their country's internal affairs. The rally was held just days after unprecedented unrest erupted in Cuba over an economic crisis aggravated by the coronavirus pandemic. Revolutionary leader Raul Castro and the Cuban president were among those attending the event.
We have come together to once again denounce the U.S. blockade, aggression, and terror. We could not put off this rally. The enemy has once again given everything to destroy the sacred unity and peace of citizens.
The Cuban president criticized the U.S. for spreading false information on social media. He also blasted Washington for defaming his government and inciting hatred and violence. He said the U.S. seeks to undermine peace and stability in Cuba. Criticism of U.S. policies vis-a-vis Cuba has not been limited to its shores. Russia has also accused the U.S. of plotting a color revolution in Cuba.
The logic is simple here. It has been tested on numerous occasions by Washington in various situations. But everything is the same, instigating color revolutions against undesirable regimes. At first, sanctions are introduced against them, and artificial problems are created or imposed from outside, which complicate the social and economic situation. On this basis, tensions are provoked, and anti-government sentiment is stirred up. When a critical mass is reached, the whole blame is laid on the national government. Labels are pinned on it, its activity is discredited, and thus the situation nears a collapse.
Iran, too, says the U.S. is the root cause of many of the problems in Cuba and should end its unilateral sanctions on the Caribbean nation. The bans were first imposed in 1960 in response to Havana's nationalization of U.S.-owned oil refineries following the Cuban Revolution. The sanctions were later extended. Even racial justice group Black Lives Matter publicly condemned the trade blockade, saying it's at the heart of Cuba's current crisis. In June, a total of 184 countries voted in favor of a UN resolution to demand an end to the US economic blockade on Cuba. Only the US and Israel voted against. That was the 29th consecutive year that the UN General Assembly called for the U.S. to end its Cuba embargo. Washington has ignored the international plea every time. U.S. President Joe Biden has called Cuba a failed state. The Cuban leaders deny that. But even if it's true, that claim serves more as an admission of guilt on the part of the U.S. than castigation of the island nation.
Well, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip have held a gathering to condemn Israel for its prolonged siege on the impoverished enclave, making daily life unbearable for them. Ruba Shabit reports.
Palestinian national and Islamic groups in the Gaza Strip held a gathering near the separation fence to slam Israel for stalling the flow of goods to the enclave. Attended by a number of Palestinian resistance leaders, the gathering voiced the resistance refusal of the Israeli attempts to provoke Palestinian outrage by widening the current blockade on the crossings connecting Gaza to the outside world.
This is a message to the Israeli regime to stop swaggering anger among Palestinians by imposing further restrictions on the reconstruction process in Gaza after latest escalation. What happened during the escalation might happen again, and the resistance is ready to defend Palestinians' rights under any condition. This inhumane siege is unacceptable. Our economy is already collapsed and things here are not bearable anymore.
Palestinian resistance called mediators and international community to redouble efforts to pressurize Israel into removing especially its restriction on building materials and construction work. The Israeli strikes displaced nearly 80,000 Gazans, including children, and destroyed 17,000 homes.
This Israeli blockade has negatively affected all aspects of life in Gaza. It has brought only further poverty and unemployment. Israeli regime is punishing our civilians twice, first by destroying their homes and second by denying reconstruction materials to them.
Palestinian resistance has warned that the new pressure by Israel will intensify the current tensions. They say are considering all options to break the siege.
It is unacceptable for Palestinians to remain silent towards this inhumane blockade that has only increased the poverty rate in Gaza. We call on the international bodies to put pressure on Israel to end this blockade. International community must stand for the humanity principles which have been violated by Israel in Gaza.
Israel imposed its suffocating siege on Gaza in 2007 after Hamas took control of the enclave in an election. Palestinians here say the delay in construction will affect the economic situation of Palestinian families, especially those who've lost their homes, by pushing up poverty rates. They also stress that the Israeli moves to impede the construction work in Gaza might trigger fresh violence. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Climate scientists were stunned by the intensity of flooding in Germany and Belgium that killed at least 120 people and damaged tens of thousands of homes, with experts saying they did not expect such extreme weather to result from the human-caused climate crisis as rapidly as it has. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Julia Conley Ryder. This article is published under the heading Climate Experts Shocked at Severity of Floods in Germany and Belgium. Here's more on the story. Scientists recently were stunned by the intensity of flooding in Germany and Belgium that killed at least 120 people and damaged tens of thousands of homes, with experts saying they did not expect such extreme weather to result from the human-caused climate crisis as rapidly as it has. More than a dozen records for rainfall were set across Western Europe, including in Cologne, where officials recorded 6 inches of rainfall in just 24 hours, nearly double the monthly average for July. The city's previous record for daily rainfall was only 3 inches. This week's event is totally untypical for that region. Dieter Gerten, professor of global change, climatology, and hydrology at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, told The Guardian. Aerial footage of our whaler in Rhineland-Palatinate showed fallen trees, abandoned cars, and inundated roads. According to the European Severe Weather Database, Rafshard saw more than 8 inches of rainfall in just 9 hours, leading to extreme flash flooding. Recently, officials reported that as many as 1,300 people were still unaccounted for, noting that the high number could be related to power supplies and cell phone networks being disrupted and some areas being difficult for rescue crews to reach. Gerten expressed shock at the severity of the disaster. "We seem to be not just above normal, but in domains we didn't expect in terms of spatial extent and the spread it developed," Gerten said. Climate scientists have warned for years that the continued extraction of fossil fuels is causing numerous changes in the climate, including extreme heat, drought, and more frequent and heavy rain, which has been linked to the warming of oceans and increased amounts of water evaporating into the air. "With climate change, we do expect all hydrometeorological extremes to become more extreme. What we have seen in Germany is broadly consistent with this trend," Carlo Bontempo, director of the Copernicus Climate Change Service at the European Center for Medium-Range Weather Forecast, told The Guardian. But, as reports said, scientists said they failed to predict the intensity of the German floods, as well as the extreme heat which enveloped the western United States and Canada in recent weeks, killing hundreds of people. "The obvious acceleration of the breakdown of stable climate simply confirms that when it comes to the climate emergency, we are in deep, deep trouble." Bill Maguire, a professor emeritus of geophysical and climate hazards at University College London, said. "The effects of the torrential downpour stretched across Western Europe, with officials in Belgium saying at least 23 people were confirmed dead and at least 19 were missing, and experts in the Netherlands and Switzerland expecting more inundation recently. We're still waiting for a definitive toll, but it could be that this flood becomes the most catastrophic our country has ever known," said Belgian Prime Minister Alexander De Croo recently. And social media progressive organizer Doyle Canning of Oregon, where temperatures reached 116 degrees earlier this month, responded to a video of flash flooding in one German city. "This is your climate on fossil fuel," said Canning as she reshared the footage. The flooding came days after the European Union unveiled a plan to transition away from fossil fuels by 2030 as part of its plan to become carbon neutral by 2050. Armin Laschet, the governor of one of Germany's hardest hit states and a candidate to replace Angela Merkel as chancellor in September election, said the rising death toll and damage to communities across Germany demonstrated that we need to continue Germany's path toward climate neutrality even faster.
food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and since today is the 7th of Zilhijjah, the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace be upon him, we offer you condolences and present you a mind-stimulating saying from the Prophet's 5th infallible successor. Laziness harms both the worldly and the religious affairs.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Salamun alaykum, dear listeners. This is your host Mehdi at Islamic Upbringing. That's our program at IRIB English Radio, where we talk about how we can provide our children with an Islamic upbringing which turns them into successful and pious individuals when they grow up. So we do welcome your questions. Our answers and our content is mostly based on Children in Quran and Sunnah. That's a book compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. Today we're going to talk about a topic which is very relevant, especially when the summers are right. Oh, well, we are in the middle of the summers. They're not right around the corner. We have Brother Miqdad here today with us, and we welcome him. Salaamu alaikum, Brother Miqdad, to another show of Islamic Upbringing.
Wa alaikum salaam wa rahmatullah.
So with the coronavirus around and we are not travelling around as we used to do, the question is, how do you deal with boredom at home when children don't have anything to do and they roam around the house all day? So the holidays are practically just indoors now. What do you have to say?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I guess that's one of the challenges that many parents must be facing. It's dealing with children at home. Schools are off. What do you do with children that want to jump around and do things, but when you look at them, they're doing pretty much nothing at home? So first and foremost, I think the first thing I'd like to say is parents need to get involved. Parents need to start making up activities, start thinking about ideas of how to keep children busy. If you go online, you would find thousands and thousands of ideas about how to keep children busy with different sorts of activities categorized according to age, according to outdoors, indoors, according to types of play, according to budget. There's plenty out there, basically. All it takes is for parents to be a bit more active, a bit more taking this a bit more in an active role, basically, rather than being passive in this. Yes, at some point you feel that children should play on their own, and inshallah we'll talk about this as well. But you have to admit that when it comes to holidays and we're all at home, then parents need to play a bit more active role in keeping their children busy. You can't expect children to just keep themselves busy on their own all day. And they need some sort of guidance, some sort of help in the games that they're going to do, the play that they're going to have. And so first advice is to is for parents to really get a bit more active, find different activities. If it requires buying things from the shop, if it requires setting things up, if it requires playing with your children, then some part of the day, I would strongly request for parents to play with their children and be involved in their activities.
Right. What age group are we talking about? You know why I'm asking this? Because I've got a two-year-old and I have no idea how to find a common ground where I'm interested. That's not important, but I can't find a way to entertain her. I'm going to return after a short break and we're going to carry on with this, if that's okay with you.
Yep.
Stay tuned, dear listeners, and we're going to carry on with this discussion after this short break.
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5-year-old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic Upbringing. Contact us. English Radio at irib.ir.
Welcome back to Islamic Upbringing at IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, we're talking about how to keep your children occupied during the summer holidays when they roam around the house all day. Brother, you're talking about activities that we need to get involved in as parents with the children.
So we're talking about children from the age of 2 up until maybe 10, even more. Obviously, the types of activities, the types of games, and the amount of time you need to spend with children will vary according to different ages. But even at the age of 2, you need to come up with different types of games and activities where parents play with their children. So the first point I mentioned was parents getting active and playing with their children, also different games. Point number 2 is that parents should then help children set up activities for children to play on their own. So many times children will actually play on their own for a long time, hours sometimes, be busy by themselves. But they would require a start to it, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes a kind of an idea, it takes kind of a start, it takes kind of a new creative thought, basically, behind setting up a game, which will then last for hours by themselves, basically. So once you, as a parent, you've set this up, children will spend hours on this, basically, without even you being there. But that initial setup, that initial idea, the initial thought is required.
Requires that effort initially, yeah.
So this is the second point that's very important. And you realize that, in fact, we need to teach children how to play by themselves. It's not something that you just learn by yourself. Many times children do play by themselves, especially role play, especially creative play. But many times you realize, actually, hold on a second, I need to teach them that, you know what, you can choose this, take this idea, for example. But just give them a couple of ideas, a couple of creative things to do. And children will then just pick it up and take it all the way forward and keep themselves busy. So this was a very important point, and we often neglect this point to really start up a play for children and then allow them to play on their own.
So does it also work when you've just got a sole child, like just one child?
Right. So in terms of sole child, then no. The answer is plain blank. You'll be struggling much more with a lone child. And this is why we've said this time and time again, and we'll repeat it, and inshallah we'll repeat it even more. It's very, very important that we have more than one child. I would say even more than 3 child. Perhaps even more than 5 child would be good.
Yeah, but what's the age difference that you...
on a serious note, it's very important that we have many children at a very, very short age gap as well. Obviously, depending on circumstance, depending on the financial situation, depending on the health situation, depending on various different circumstances. But the normal thing would be to have many children. And only if there's a reason for not to have children, then we should go and analyze this reason and say, really, is it a good reason? Otherwise, the Islam teaches us that we need to have a lot of children at a small gap. And you see the effects of this. Especially in summer when you have to stick at home. When you have 4 children between the age of 2 and 8, you'll realize that the house is much more fun. There's not too many issues of boredom. Children do get busy, and it's a lively house, and there's a lot of growth, there's a lot of fun, there's a lot of amazing things that happen in this house, as opposed to a house that has 1 3-year-old who just roaming around and doesn't know what to do and hoping that maybe a friend will pass by.
Yeah, or so when you've got a dozen children, you don't need to take them to the zoo then. We're going to return after a short break and carry on about how to entertain the child and how to help them keep themselves entertained. Please stay tuned.
Imam Kadhim alayhi salam said, "It is a recommended practice for a child to play in his childhood, so that he becomes patient in his adulthood."
Welcome back to our Islamic upbringing. We're talking about children, how they can keep themselves entertained and what role we have to play in this.
So we said that we need to play with our children, come up with loads of different activities. We need to set up games for them, start up games for them, teach them how to play on their own by showing them different ideas. We talked about the importance of having many children. And obviously, this is not going to save this summer. But in the future, and for parents that are listening that don't have children yet or that are thinking of having children, we definitely would recommend strongly to have many children at a small gap, basically. We're talking about a gap of 2 years between children, between siblings. It really does play a huge role in a child's upbringing, without a doubt. Another point that we need to be careful about is TV. So children, when they get bored, obviously one of the first questions that comes up is, can I watch TV or can I play PlayStation or whatever the game, console game that they have, computer games? So the answer to this is yes. Don't limit it to zero. Don't completely cancel out screen time. Screen time has a role to play, especially in today's world. Obviously, it's not the ideal, but out of not having too much choice, living in today's society, you have to give them some screen time. But I would say very strongly, in addition to making sure that the content and what they're watching and what they're playing is scrutinized to the dot, you also have to give a time limit as well. More than an hour a day is a lot, and you would cross boundaries. Mm-hmm. One thing you have to remember is that actually the more TV time and the more screen time you give, the worse it'll get. Children that spend more time on TV, their creativity level goes down, they become a bit more lazy, they don't want to do things. Their mind is running whilst their body is switched off. These are children that will get bored more often. And it's actually on the opposite side. If you have children that don't watch TV, those are the children that are less bored.
So they've enough creativity now to initiate something out of nothing that you might not see.
Exactly. They're the children that are playing the streets. They come up with different kind of games. They're kind of creative with different things that they have around them. They're active children, active, happy, physical children, basically, as opposed to children who spend a lot of time on TV. Right. And you find them that if you have to switch off the TV one day, then life is miserable for them.
Precisely.
And they make it miserable for their parents. I'm bored, I don't do anything, I want to keep watching TV.
It's actually interesting that the children, even if they do whine a bit at the beginning, they tend to forget what the TV or the PlayStation or the mobile phone, whatever it is, very quickly. So we have to just be tolerant with that few minutes.
Yeah, so we have to be careful about when it comes to television and computer games. Limit screen time to, particularly, I mean, they should know basically my time for screen time is 10 to 11 basically, and that's it. There's no screen time after that, and then I have to get busy out.
In another way.
Yes. We'll suggest that you don't start the day with TV and you don't end the day with TV. So TV should come somewhere around the middle of the day. So in the morning, first in the morning, you have to be very active, full of different games, etc. Nighttime is a more relaxing time, stories, etc. Again, no TV at that time. TV should come around the middle of the day when they're a bit tired. We've done a lot of different things. Now we can sit down and watch a bit of TV, play a bit of console, computer games, and then back to doing different things.
Right, so I think that's enough for this program because that's a lot to take in, even for parents to practically apply that in their lives. We carry on talking about this, are we?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the next programs, we're going to carry on about how to help your child keep himself entertained. If you've got any questions, please send them in at englishradio@irib.ir. Do visit our website, parstoday.com. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
The Light.
Every year, a lot of animals lose their life due to various kinds of accidents, but some of them are lucky enough to get a second chance. Perseus, the Greek cat, is one of them. The stray feline was taken to a vet in the city of Larissa last year after a terrible accident. The vets had to perform 3 surgeries, but Perseus lost the same number of limbs. However, he managed to stay alive and was given prosthetic legs. Perseus has adapted perfectly to his new limbs and now uses them to get around. He has also managed to snatch the heart of his saviors as visitors at the clinic where he cured have grown. The Japanese art collective has created a mesmerizing environment in a forest where nature and technology come together. In the mountains of Kyushu in southern Japan, the nature comes to life after the dark. Flowers and trees are illuminated in a glowing ripple shine, while rocks turn colorful with light installations. A waterfall made of light pours gently on a bright rock. Some rocks have calligraphy, and artificial pond projects colorful fish too. The artists behind the work say their aim is to unite technology and nature.
The thing is, sometimes people think it's a digital and nature is completely it's against each other. But in the same time, we think it's in the digital and the nature is quite easy to it's merged.
The Japanese team also wants to raise awareness about the original beauty of the nature, which they say is often ignored. To remind people of that, they hold exhibitions combining projections, sound, and carefully designed spaces. So far, the group has organized several art shows of this kind. Animals have been providing protection and service to people since time immemorial. They have not only been the source of food like meat, butter and milk, but also served humans by eating plants toxic to them. Authorities in New York City have taken 24 goats from a nearby farm to the Riverside Park in Manhattan to munch on invasive weeds. They say it's an environmentally friendly win-win for the species removal at the park. The goats get to feast on overgrown bush, and Riverside Park Conservancy doesn't have to dump harsh chemicals on weeds. Park officials say it's both healthy for the goats and good for the environment.
As part of our woodland restoration initiative, 2 years ago, we unleashed a very hungry group of goats into a stretch of the park that had been overrun with invasive plants. And wow, did they exceed expectations. We called it Gotham because we put the goat in Gotham. They chowed down on Japanese knotweed. They noshed on porcelain berry. They snacked on multiflora rose. They easily traversed the hard-to-reach terrain behind me and gulped down poison ivy without even giving it a second thought. Since goats are naturally effective weed whackers, putting them to work in Gotham is like treating them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It's healthy for the goats, and it's good for the environment. That's farm to table.
People visiting the goats at the zoo say these animals are emotionally intelligent and connect with people. Goats are an ingenious approach to weed removal, eating species dangerous to humans like poison ivy. Of the 24 goats, 5 will call Riverside Park its home through the end of August. For some others, the public can vote to determine which goats will be crowned the greatest of all time. The winner will be announced by the end of the summer.
Singapore unveils one of the world's biggest floating solar panel farms in a bid for quadrupling its solar energy production by 2025. The farm is as big as 45 football fields. It includes 122,000 solar panels. The panels are designed to last for 25 years, and drones will be used to assist with maintenance. The farm is located on a reservoir in western Singapore and will generate enough electricity to power its 5 water treatment plants. It puts Singapore among the few countries in the world with a water treatment system fully powered by green energy. The farm can reduce Singapore's carbon emissions by 32,000 tons annually. Floating solar panels perform up to 15% better than conventional rooftop panels. That's because of the cooling effect of water, and that shading from other buildings does not affect them. Singapore is currently developing 4 other floating solar panel projects. Maybe kittens are considered the cutest baby animals by many of us, but just wait to see this baby hippo, which was born during a full moon. The male calf was born in a Mexican zoo last month. He weighs 30 kilos upon birth. Since then, he has spent most of his time bonding with his mother. The vets in the zoo say he is healthy, playful, strong, and a bit hyperactive. They say some of his habits are surprisingly similar to that of a horse or a dolphin. Generally, reproduction among zoo hippos is not a common practice. Therefore, newborn calves are signs of high quality of the lives and habitats of their parents. A zoo in central France is welcoming the birth of a male giraffe after 15 months of waiting. The calf is named after Melman, the giraffe character in the Madagascar movie franchise. He was born on Sunday in a Bouval Zoo park. He is 170 centimeters tall and weighs 55 kilograms. Zookeepers say Melman is a special baby.
A giraffe birth here. It's our second birth since we've had the group of females established for a few years. So for us, it's still quite an important and exceptional event because it's not every day that we have a giraffe birth.
The giraffe keepers say Melman stood on his feet for the first time 45 minutes after being born. Since zoos have opened in France, visitors can enjoy seeing little Melman playing around with his mother. The birth of the baby giraffe is good news for wildlife preservation, as according to estimates, the number of the animal in the wild has dropped by about 30% since the 1980s.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The issue of marine trash has long worried scientists and environmentalists. Now a French engineer has invented a robot to help clean ocean waste. The Jellyfish Bot is a remote-controlled electric-powered boat that helps clean rubbish from the surface of the water. It's 70 centimeters long and 70 wide, almost the size of a suitcase. The robot can collect everything from plastic bottles to masks and even oil and petrol. Despite its wide-ranging utility, Jellyfish Bot has a rather simple mechanism.
To collect trash, you have to do something as simple as possible, because otherwise, if we put too complicated mechanisms, it can get blocked and things can get stuck in the system. We designed the robot with a slide mechanism that goes towards a net, so we fill up the net, we take back the net, and that's the end of it.
The trash-collecting robot is being used at around 15 ports in France, lightening the workload of local cleaners. It has also been exported to countries including Japan, Norway, and Singapore. The makers have also developed an autonomous version of the boat.
Malaysians at a vaccination center in the city of Kuching have witnessed a surprising scene. A T-Rex turned up to get his COVID-19 jab. Fitness instructor Kenny Sia dressed up in a dinosaur costume to amuse people, doesn't he look fabulous, and protect himself. Sia said he made the decision to lift up the spirits of frontline health workers is exhausted by vaccinating over 5,000 people a day. People rushed to take pictures with him, hailing his appearance and historic. Funny. A giant 3D cat has risen to fame in the Japanese capital, Tokyo, bringing joy to citizens amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A massive billboard featuring the cat has been installed in one of Tokyo's busiest districts. The realistic-looking cat on a 4K resolution screen appears every few minutes between advertisements. Depending on the time of day, the cat appears differently and sometimes meowing at people walking by. The companies that set up the billboard hope that they can cheer people up during the dark era of the coronavirus pandemic. The display has already caused a frenzy in the city and among the social platforms, with many expressing joy and amazement at the technology.
Peru is full of natural wonders worthy of appreciation in each of its regions. A zoo in the capital, Lima, has now unveiled an incredibly cute and adorable Andean alpaca calf to attract visitors amid dwindling zoo-goers due to the coronavirus pandemic. This fairy baby alpaca named Paquita is just 1 month old and was introduced to the public on the eve of the 200th anniversary of Peru's independence from Spain. The zoo has also displayed its families of llamas, alpaca, and vicuña. The three are members of South American camelids biological family and are traditionally valued for their soft and warm wool. They live in the Andes Mountains, which lay thousands of meters above sea level. Peruvians are proud of the history of wools associated with these species, which have common ancestors with camels.
Four German tightrope walkers have set a new world highlining distance record by crossing an Arctic valley in Sweden. The group tiptoed a distance of more than 2 kilometers between two mountain peaks in Lapland barefoot. The line they walked on was set at a height of 600 meters. The four members of the team walked the line one after another successfully, despite challenges including the wind and long distance. It took 2 days for the team to rig the line between the two peaks.
A herd of elephants migrating in China have been making headlines for months. Now they have once again attracted attention. Experts monitoring the animals this week noticed two females engaged in a dramatic fight over the herd's leadership, where they kicked and bit each other. The tussle soon ended after a male elephant succeeded in calming the belligerent giants. The fight happened in China's southwestern province of Yunnan. The herd embarked on a lengthy journey last year after escaping a nature reserve and has since trekked hundreds of miles. The elephant's migration is the longest one in China's history. A distinctive feature, no matter of humans or animals, often catches our attention. You might have heard stories about the big fat cow or other animals you love the most. Here we bring you a story about a cow for her not being big, but for being the smallest. Rani, a 23-month-old cow, is being reared on a farm near the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. She is only 20 inches tall and weighs 26 kilograms. Local vets say the little Rani has no physical problems but will no longer gain any weight or height. The owner believes Rani is shorter than the smallest cow in Guinness World Record. The record for the smallest cow so far held by a 4-year-old red cow named Manikyam from the Indian state of Kerala.
We found on the internet that the smallest known cow is living in India's Kerala, which weighs 40 kilograms, but ours weighs only 26, so we believe ours is the world's smallest. That's why we applied